Cinema Chat Podcast, your source for all movie news, reviews, and opinions on movies, past, present, and future.
Welcome to the show, everyone. It's Cinema Chat Podcast, your podcast from a galaxy far, far away. I'm Brent.
And I'm Rob.
And joining us is...
Hello, everybody. Reggie.
It's Reggie. We're good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm doing good.
I think this is either your eighth or ninth show?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It's like almost a third of the shows. We're going to have to change the name here pretty soon. but this week, we are here to talk about Star Wars. All things Star Wars. But, you know, mostly the good trilogy. We're not really going to get too much into those prequels that no one really cares about anymore. We really liked them when they came out, though, if you all remember.
No, we didn't.
How?
We're going to be doing a little bit of a different format this week. We're going to skip over what did we watch this week, because let's face it, we didn't watch shit.
That's
and
right.
We're going to get into some quick but thorough movie news.
Yeah, hot topics.
Take us away, Rob.
All right, folks. Well, we finally got confirmation that the Iron Fist Netflix series is coming.
All right.
So we got a story synopsis and a whole bunch of other goodies. Did you guys hear about this?
I did. I was surprised because I was starting to get the feeling that it was not going to happen. I felt like they were just going to shove the character in somewhere. But that's interesting.
I thought for a second they were just going to do a movie instead of a show.
Which I would have been fine with, to be honest. But, you know, good.
Yeah, there was some hubbub about already about people saying they better not, you know, use an Asian American actor. They want the character to stay Caucasian. Did you hear anything about that?
No,
I didn't. Yeah. No.
You know, it's the same old, you know, it's not like you can't, you know, it's not like the comic books. We don't want it. Kind of.
Yeah, we got into that a little bit last week.
But yeah, I'm glad that they're working on it. We're going to have our, you know, Luke Cage and Daredevil and Jessica Jones and now Iron Fist, you know, and probably Punisher is going to come later. And also a quick tidbit was that there was a discussion about if ever, like, these Netflix heroes could ever show up into the movie universe, though like the movies and the TV are like two separate companies or whatever you want to call it. But it was confirmed, you know, since Disney is the big boss, if Disney says we want a crossover or we want these guys with the Avengers or so on and so forth, it's going to happen. So Disney has the final say whether or not there's going to be a crossover between the TV and the movie heroes.
Yeah, I think that's a little cover your ass. I think they just don't want to pigeonhole themselves just yet.
Right.
They want to leave that open, which they should. They should leave it as open as they could.
I think I really like the universe that they've built around, you know, their properties in the MCU, but there are times I think, I don't know, their universes are so different, you know, like the Netflix is so much different from just the, you know, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the movies. But, you know, because like there are times where I'm watching Netflix and there's a little disconnect, you know, like, why don't they just call them the Avengers for this?
I mean, they could. I have faith in them that if they wanted to try to mesh it a little bit, that they could figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah. I think it works now.
Yeah.
It's good news, though. I think that, you know, like, whatever they do with Infinity War, however that results, they're going to need to start replacing some of the original members. And they could definitely pull from, you know, the Netflix series. So, or if there's something like so huge like Thanos that they can't do it by themselves, then they team up with the Defenders, you know. You know, like Brent said, you know, they should leave it open in case, you know, they want to do that. But
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that you know, our other topic was gonna be on, and since we're talking about Avengers again, that Captain America: Civil War, one of the Russo brothers, discusses that the Spider-Man costume could be something that we thought wasn't going to be in the movie, and I'm referring to the Iron Spider suit.
Really?
Yep. That because they asked him, why didn't we see Spider-Man in that new trailer that they released not too long ago? And his response was that that Spider-Man wasn't ready because he was still in post-production, having CG work done on the costume. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have taken, well, if it's just like the regular blue and red costume, why do you need CG? But much like the Iron Man costume, the Iron Man costume is mostly CG. And they're saying that that's probably why that they haven't shown, because the suit that Iron Man is supposed to give him near the end of the movie is going to be the Iron Spider suit and not just the regular blue and red suit.
They're going to have him in the regular suit, though. I think they just want to keep him locked away for as long as they can to generate some buzz whenever he gets closer to release. Wind up in the Iron Spider costume, but they're going to have him in a borderline traditional suit for probably a good portion of the movie. Yeah,
they were speculating that he was going to still have his his cobbled together suit where it is like a hoodie and he's wearing goggles and he has a red bandana over his face, and then Tony Stark was going to give him the traditional red and blue suit. But then it's more now with this news, it's more likely that he has the red and blue suit already, and then at the end or later on in the movie, probably after everything is sorted out, then Iron Man gives him the Iron Spider suit.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to... Whoa.
Sorry.
I think they're just trying to keep him close to the vest. So
do we know if the actual actor is going to be in it, or is it just like CGI Spider-Man?
As far as I know, he is definitely in it. Everything I've heard suggests that he's going to be in it, suggests that Marissa Tomei has a scene in it as Aunt May. So I don't think there's really much of a question to that, as all signs have pointed to him being in it.
Yeah, he did have a stuntman for some of the like the wire work.
Mm-hmm.
But any of the standing, you know, dialogue is going to be Tom Holland.
Yeah, I know he was on set, so yeah, I think that's pretty definitive proof that he will be in the movie as opposed to just stuntman CGI stuff. So,
all right, well, real quick, is that Fox released the new X-Men Apocalypse trailer, and it looked pretty amazing. What did you guys think?
Boy, did they. Oh, my goodness. Cool. I swear, just whenever you think, like, you can't get excited about superhero movies, they keep releasing these trailers that just get me excited for all of them. And I'm nowhere near superhero fatigue at this point. Just, I can't get enough. And
yeah,
this one looks really good.
Yeah, I had my doubts as well about Oscar Isaac playing the villain Apocalypse. But then when they showed that scene where he grows large and he like puts his hand down on Charles Xavier, I'm like, yes, you got me. I'm in.
That is a really well cut trailer.
Yes.
Yes.
I was surprised that they didn't show Wolverine anywhere in the trailer. Usually he's like the whole face of the of this whole franchise. So that was the one surprising thing that, you know, I was shocked about.
It looked great, though.
Yeah,
got me excited for it.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. That's
so excited.
If I'm not mistaken, he's one of your favorites, right, Reggie?
Oh, yeah, he is.
Your top. Yeah, he looked really good.
I'm so excited that they're doing him right.
Yeah, I think that I really wanted to see them show Psylocke a little bit more. In that trailer, because they showed, you know, the other three horsemen predominantly.
And Jennifer Lawrence looks so good in that trailer.
Oh yeah, she does.
So good.
But you didn't see her once in the Mystique makeup. She was like, just regular herself. So I wonder if she's gonna switch back and forth at all, or I guess she's just gonna have to be. I can't wait to see how Nightcrawler is gonna be too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
tons of intrigue.
It seems like they went back with the tattoo Nightcrawler, which is interesting.
I'm all in.
Yeah, the actor that they have casted for that seems really, really young. So hopefully they can and they're refocusing back on the original team with this new young cast. So hopefully they can do the pull it off in a way that maybe was better than the they did it in the original Bryan Singer movies.
Yeah.
All right, guys, one last thing before we move on. Is we have to we can't go any further without mentioning Star Wars news because it's all in the buzz right now. We're less than a week away for it, and what we have is that J.J. Abrams kind of like revealed the origins of the Star Wars The Force Awakens script. Basically, he's like telling us what he had to do to kind of get the script up and running for this movie when they first started this project, and how the they were gonna go with the script written by Michael Arndt, but JJ and the consulting writer Kasdan, who originally wrote Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. They didn't like it, so basically, JJ and Kasdan decided to scrap the script that Michael Arndt wrote, and they basically rewrote the entire script themselves, filling in a lot of holes and open-ended items that they felt weren't going to be good for the movie.
We're less than a week away. That's all I can think about.
I'm glad that they're taking so much care with this. It's giving me a lot of hope for this movie.
Yeah, and JJ also mentioned that it doesn't matter how many of the trailers you watch, you're still gonna have a fresh and new experience to the movie because he made sure that none of the trailers revealed anything to do with the main storyline. In the movie, so
Yeah, and that's what I've been thinking all along whenever people are saying that they're showing too much. I just don't see Abrams letting that happen. And I think the people at Disney would trust enough in him to give him the leeway to show what he does and doesn't want to be shown. I don't think that they would screw with him too much on that because he has a good track record. And I have faith that there's going to be plenty of stuff in this movie that we haven't seen yet and that we don't know what to expect going in.
Exactly, like we know nothing of any of the CG characters, pretty much. I mean, we know
Exactly.
who's playing CG characters, but we don't know what they are, what they're.
Have we even seen pictures of them? I don't think we've seen pictures.
No,
No.
not at all.
And we haven't seen Luke, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we mentioned
Ah.
about Luke last week, why he wasn't shown in there, but also, I think. This came off the tail of that they released the international trailer, which was more was for the Chinese audience, and a lot of people were complaining that oh, this trailer is showing too much, and I think this was in kind of like in a response to saying that no, it's not going to spoil anything, and he purposely made sure that all the trailers didn't reveal anything. Major in any of these trailers, so
I'm ready.
we're almost there. Thursday night, people, I'm
Yes,
watching it.
me too.
Well, Friday
Woo!
morning, 2 a.m.
Yeah. That's gonna wrap up movie news. We're gonna skip box office this week. Suffice to say, The Hunger Games came in first place again. We've already talked about it 2 weeks in a row. There's nothing else to say. So Hunger Games, good for you. 3 weeks in a row.
Amazing.
Yeah. I said I was going to read the iTunes reviews. We're going to put that off a week because we got an email to read that's going to take the place of those. It's from a new emailer. His name is Xavier. And it says, "Hello, gents. Just wanted to shoot you guys an email letting you know that more people than just Reggie listen to and enjoy your show."
There you go.
"I've listened since episode one." Oh, well, good for you.
Yeah.
You deserve a medal, sir.
Thank you.
"I've listened since episode one, but I had some family troubles come up. My dad passed away. So I got behind on listening to you guys. Now that I'm finally caught up, I wanted to touch base with you and tell you that I love your show and to say thank you for helping distract me, even for just 45 minutes or an hour from my dad's passing. I know it may not seem like much to you guys, but that little break means a lot to someone going through a hard time. So I know a lot of people haven't been writing to the show, but I just wanted to say that for me personally, it's a great way to zone out from everyday life and just listen to you guys talk about something I love very much. Movies. So keep up the awesome work, and I'll be listening every week. P.S. Holy shit, we're days away from episode 7.
Yes.
Love you guys, Xavier."
Thanks, Xavier. That really means a lot. I really didn't think that, you know, a podcast that, you know, a couple of guys that met up on the internet would really be beneficial and in enjoyment that we, you know, we were just doing for fun. And, you know, I feel for your loss, and also thank you for continuing to listen to us. It really means a lot. We'll definitely keep this going because we love doing it, and it comes out to the audience how much that we love doing this and how much we love movies. So thanks again for listening.
Yeah, I when I got this email, I read it, and it touched me. It really did. Sorry for your loss. So sorry. I still have both of my parents, and I can't imagine what it feels like. And like Rob said, I never thought that it would provide this would provide that for someone, and you really have no idea how much it means to me, and I'm assuming Rob, to hear something like that. It really made me feel good. I was going to wait to respond to him on the podcast, but I did exchanged a few emails with him after reading it just because it meant so much to me that I couldn't wait to talk to him and you know, get to know just a little bit more about him. And thank you so much for listening. And like I said, if you've listened to every episode, good for you. I'm sorry for the first few.
Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us. And you know, I feel like we're kind of finding our groove pretty well now.
Oh, you guys definitely are.
Thank you, Reggie. But yeah, sorry for your loss, and thank you for listening. And hopefully, we can continue providing an escape for you when you need it, and for anyone else out there also. Thank you for listening, everyone. It's a very touching thing to hear. Thank you. Smoothly transitioning into the movie review.
Star Wars, everybody. Star Wars.
Star Wars, the original trilogy that we all grew up with. All three of these movies are PB, pre-Brent. They were all released before I was born. But as opposed to some of the other reviews that we've done for science fiction, fantasy movies that came out before I was alive, these are very much near and dear to my heart, and I love them very much. You will not be hearing a 2 out of 10 on this episode from me.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to go pretty loosely. We're just going to have like a free-flowing conversation here, guys. The movies were released in three-year intervals, 77, 80, and 83. Like I said, they're all before I was born, but my goodness, have they held up, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I did want to mention that when they re-released these movies back in 1997, I think that George Lucas like really messed around with it too much and kind of threw things off a little bit, even though some of the additions he made the film effects better.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people complained that he went a little bit overboard with some of the stuff he added.
And I'm one of those people. I don't oppose to everything that he did. There was a lot of positive stuff, but a lot of the like adding of CGI creatures and stuff like that, some of it just looks like it doesn't fit into, you know, the film that was created before. I'm all for improving upon things that were already there. It's the addition of things that weren't there that right. bothers me. I wouldn't have had a problem with him touching it up. It's all the additions that really bug me.
Yeah, the additions bug me too, especially when when you grew up or you knew the originals, the untouched versions, and then the additions were just a bit distracting. But I think there were some things that I really did kind of like some of the space battles, some of that stuff. I thought I didn't mind it as much, but you know, there are other things like Han shooting for, like Han originally shot first, and then he puts that in so that Greedo shoots, and it's like,
wait a second, who shot first?
Han shot first.
That's right.
No way. That never happened.
Yeah, it was self-defense. I love that whole introduction scene to Han Solo, because it pretty much gives you exactly who we're dealing with for the rest of the movie series. And it seems like he'll be playing a pivotal role in this new movie that's coming up next week as well.
Yeah, he's all over the trailers now.
Yeah, absolutely. He looks like he's playing like somewhat like of a guide role.
Yeah,
which is very surprising to me.
He seems to be what like Obi-Wan was in A New Hope. So that's the vibe I'm getting. Whether or not that pans out to be true, I don't know. But from the trailers, that's the vibe I've gotten. And I think that's probably a good place to start. Let's talk about the characters. I mean, this universe, while it's about wars in the stars, it's really about characters and story. A lot of people talk about George Lucas failing as a director and a writer and messing up all the things that had been done previously. But where the man doesn't fail is world building and characterization. He knows what he's doing as far as building a universe. And this universe is rich with character. All the way from, the Luke through the other main characters into the Sith and, even the characters in the cantina. I mean, just it all adds to it. So I wanted to ask you all, who's your most favorite character? We're going to go original trilogy only. Most favorite, least favorite. Because I say that because we know who your least favorite character is over the six movies, but
and are you gonna say Darth Vader? Because I'm gonna say Darth Vader.
I was either gonna say Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker, but I think I was gonna lean towards Luke.
Don't forget about Lando.
He's a good character, but I think Lando is my brother's favorite though.
Go ahead, Reggie.
Yeah, most favorite, Luke Skywalker. Least favorite, C-3PO.
Okay.
You find him annoying? Or
I do find him annoying, and he's just always complaining, and I don't know. Like, if I had a droid like C-3PO, I think I would have turned him in. I would have gotten a refund. because he's just always complaining, he's always scared, and it's just, I don't know. When things are heated, when things are, really going down and they like need everybody on board, he's the one, always one, saying why this won't work or why that won't work, always losing his head. And
you have to remember that the droids are primary purpose is for comedic relief. And George Lucas, he said himself that he made these movies for kids, not for adults. So that's why we have that travesty of Jar Jar Binks from the prequels.
Shh.
So, but in the originals, that's pretty much what they were. They were there to, relieve the tension. They were there to, break up in between scenes. So, and I think they've served a purpose. I think using them is much better than what he did in the prequel movies, and I'm glad to see that they're still be used in the new Star Wars The Force Awakens movie. But what I wanted to say was, I'm on the fence between Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker as a kind of a favorite character. But my least favorite would have to be Princess Leia.
What?
Really?
Yeah, because I found her constant bickering. Yeah, you know, I don't know if you want to call it showboating, trying to show everybody that, like, you know, she's the princess and she's, you know, part of the Rebel Alliance and all that other jazz. I think that she could have been a little bit more, like, more human, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she was very, very standoffish, and that kind of put me off to that. But, like, in...
I don't know. I think she was a bit standoffish because she, like, it was so important to her, and then the people around her just seemed to, at least in the beginning, didn't take it seriously, you know? She's getting rescued by basically, you know, like, this amateur group, and, you know, they're like, like, when she says, what's our exit plan? And they have none, so...
Yeah, they're just flying by the seat of their pants.
I can understand why she would be so brusque with them. Because yeah, it's like,
this is where Han Solo comes in and saves the day, like, you know, a typical swashbuckler. I think that he stole the show in that part of the movie.
So, you're saying your favorite character, you said it was who?
I was in between... Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader.
Okay, I'm gonna need you to pick one.
I'll go with the Darth Vader then.
Okay. Well, we all three have different favorite characters. Mine's Han Solo. I love Han. It's a travesty what they did with him later on in the trilogy. He was not used properly in the final film.
I'm gonna have to explain that.
I hate that he's basically turned into a plot device. I hate all the scenes where he can't see. I don't think they used Harrison Ford's skills properly in the final movie. And that is why Return of the Jedi is my least favorite out of the trilogy. My least favorite character is Grand Moff Tarkin. And it's mainly because as a child, Peter Cushing frightened me. He was creepy looking. I didn't enjoy him. And I've carried that along into adulthood. I've never enjoyed Cushing's performance. He's a fine actor, but in that movie, I did not care for him. And, you know, it stuck with me into adulthood.
Wow.
Well, when you say Han Solo is a plot device, like, you mean, like, whenever he's on screen, it's because, you know, something's going to happen, like an action sequence, or what exactly are you referring to?
He really has, there's really not much of a character arc for him in the final movie. He's mainly, they just use him to move the plot along. There's almost no characterization for him. He's just a device that they use to move the plot forward.
I think that's because
it's not about Han Solo, it's about the Skywalkers.
But I want it to be. Because I like Han Solo better. It's my...
Well, you're going to have to wait for the Han Solo solo movie.
I don't know if I like 70-year-old Han Solo, but I like young, swashbuckling, as you said, Han Solo. I like the Indiana Jones Han Solo. I don't care much for Harrison's work, you know, recently. Anything he's done since he's gotten a little longer in the tooth, I haven't really cared for. So I'm curious to see...
Recently, as in, like, after Air Force One, or...
Oh, I love Air Force One.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say post Air Force One. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good stopping point, I would say. But,
I can see that.
Yeah, he's become kind of a crazy old man, from what I can tell. But that doesn't change my opinion of Han Solo in...
Well, I'm Han Solo. Every action sequence that is, one of the good action sequences for any of the three movies, he has some form of involvement. Like when they're having that that battle over the Sarlacc pit in when they're fighting Jabba the Hutt, when they're doing the assault on the moon base on Endor that he's in charge of, or when they're rescuing the princess in the New Hope movie. All of these action sequences with him are like my favorites out of those movies. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, it would have to be the lightsaber battles, but the lightsaber battles are very stoic and one-sided, where you have the action sequences where, you know, exactly like you said, it has like that Indiana Jones kind of feel to it, where they're running around and things are flying around and you don't know which way they're going. That's what I enjoyed about the Han Solo characters, that he brought that that brevity to the movie, where it could have been very stoic and monotone without him.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, I'm throwing these guys. These guys have no preparation involved with this. I wanted it to kind of come off the top of their head. Favorite line,
Reggie, from the original.
We will open this up to all six movies. I'll give you mine. The most pimp line ever uttered in motion picture history.
Okay, I know what
you're talking about. I love you. I know.
That's a good one.
I love it, and it was improvised on set. It wasn't in the script. That was all Harrison Ford, and that's a great line. It's awesome.
Okay, I think my favorite line, I can tell you which one I quote all the time. It's the one where Yoda pulls the X-Wing out of the water, and then Luke's like, "I don't believe it." And then Yoda just looks at him and says, "That's why you fail." Like, I quote that all the time, but my favorite line would have to be where Luke says to the Emperor, "You failed, Emperor. I'm a Jedi like my father before me." I just think that moment is just, it's like all the movies lead up to that one moment where Luke has finally accepted that he's a Jedi, and he's finally accepted his father and everything, and the legacy of the Jedi. And in that moment, the Emperor knows that he's totally lost.
What about you, Rob?
then die, and then he shoots. Then we see him shooting with laser. That's a awesome scene. But I would have to say my favorite would have to be that when Darth Vader tells Luke, "No, I am your father." That's like the most biggest like.
Thing. Most misquoted line in movie history.
Yeah,
but I think that's pretty much my favorite. And then like the second would have to be, "These aren't the droids you're looking for."
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'll replace it with something else all the time.
Yeah,
I like that line a lot.
Yeah, a lot of people also say like the Admiral Akbar, "It's a trap.
It's a trap."
I embarrass my girlfriend all the time. Do you all ever like open automatic doors with the Force?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure I'm not the only one, because I do it a lot.
Not only that, but I try to like force pull stuff across the room. Like, you know, like if my phone's ringing, I'll be like, oh, okay, not today.
Yeah. There's sometimes where I wish that, like I reach out to the remote and it automatically flies into my hand. You know, I've done that quite a few times.
But the other day though, I had a thought. I was like, maybe we shouldn't do that, because like we wouldn't be prepared if it actually flew across the room.
You know? Right? You'd be like, oh shit.
Yeah, I like the since you brought up Yoda, that he has quite a few good lines throughout this trilogy. Like my favorite from him would be, you know, when Luke tells him that he can't do it, or that you know, he'll give it a try. He tells him, "Do or do not. There is no try."
Yeah,
that's a good one too.
That's another one I use at work, and I don't think anyone knows what I'm talking about, but I do say that a lot at work. Managing people, giving orders. That's one that comes out of my mouth frequently. I'd say probably every couple of weeks at least.
Another line of mine that's a favorite of mine is actually from the prequels, but when Obi-Wan is standing there at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and he's, you know, looking at Anakin, and Anakin's like, I'm, you know, I'm more powerful than you thought. And then Obi-Wan's like, I've got the high ground. This is one, you know? And then when he's just yelling at him, you know, that anger, he's like, you're supposed to, you know, destroy the Sith, you know, or bring balance to the Force.
That is a really great sequence of dialogue, specifically from Ewan McGregor. The whole, you were my brother.
Right.
You were supposed to bring balance to the Force, not, was it shrouded in darkness?
Not leave it in ruins or
something like, I can't, that's going to bug me now. But, and then you follow it up with, I hate you.
Right.
But Ewan McGregor's really great in that scene. He's someone that, you know, he didn't phone in his performance like some had done previously in the saga. And I think that his performance kind of gets left, you know, they throw the baby out with the bathwater sometimes. I think there's several points in the series where he gives a really great performance. I'd say as far as the acting in the entire saga, I'd put him up there close to the top.
I definitely agree.
As far as performances go.
He really emotes a lot. And I think even though the original to the prequels, rather, are supposed to be about Anakin Skywalker, you see so much development from Obi-Wan in his character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being a Padawan to him becoming a Jedi Master and whatnot. And Ewan McGregor really pulls that off.
I mean, there's a lot, even in the original trilogy, there's a lot of wooden performances from good actors. You know, Alec Guinness doesn't exactly knock it out of the park. He does what he's supposed to do, but he could have done a lot more with it, probably. And, you know, everyone has their times where they're good. But as far as, like, consistency across the board, I think he's got it. Another performance that people get way too down on, while he's not perfect by any stretch, in Revenge of the Sith, Hayden Christensen delivers a much better performance than he did in Attack of the Clones. He's way more comfortable in the role. Seems like he knows a little. Go watch Attack of the Clones.
I watched them all, you know, for preparation for Star Wars, for Force Awakens. I mean, yes, he's better than in Attack of the Clones,
but Attack of the Clones
was so bad that
he is,
you know,
he's robotic.
He didn't have to do much to be better than that.
But there's improvement, and I think sometimes people don't want to give credit at all. And, but, you know, a lot of that's on Lucas.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think a lot of the acting choices are, I don't think you can lay them at the feet of the actors. I think a lot of that has to do with Lucas.
I mean, when you have Sam Jackson, one of the best actors in, you know, right now, charisma out his ass, and he's extremely robotic in his role. And I guess that can be laid upon the Jedi kind of being dry, but they don't have to be that dry. They don't have to be robotic. They don't have to be, you know, wooden statues for the majority of their performance. And Ewan McGregor proved that, but yeah. I digress. Back to the original trilogy. I want to talk about the trench scene. What's your all's opinion on that scene, you know, as opposed to like when you first saw the movie to the, you know, countless other times that you've watched it? Does it still exhilarate you in the same way, or are you just wanting to get to the end of it?
Oh no, I love every second of that trench scene.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Just the way that they go in, like, and then, you know, they dive in. Starships wouldn't move like that, but you don't care.
Who cares?
You know, you know, and then when the TIE fighters come out and they're picking them off one by one, it's like there's so much tension there, you know, because it's like, will they get around? And then even if they get into the trench, you know, when they fire that first shot and it misses, it's like, oh, just the whole trench scene is beautiful. It's an epic piece of film.
It's a good thing they had Womp Rats on Tatooine.
He didn't need it because he used the Force.
Well,
he used the Force, Luke.
We'll see. We'll talk about that, I guess. In that sense, Do you really think he's using the Force?
Oh, definitely.
Because I've always been of the opinion that he's not.
He definitely like... uses it because he. That's what Obi-Wan was like telling him is like, you know.
You think he just got lucky?
No, I think that he's skilled, and I think that they want to give the illusion that he's doing that, but I think really in all reality, he's just kind of given himself the ability to breathe and relax. He's not tense. Nah. And I don't think he's in tune with the Force yet.
No, I think he could feel it. And then you actually can, if you watch the scene, you can actually see that he actually like closes his eyes in somewhat in like a focusing manner before he shoots. So I think that they, you know, for the time, you know, for what they could do, that he is using the Force to kind of like direct him, like where to shoot the missiles.
Do you think Obi-Wan is helping him use the Force, or do you think that he's just innately tapping into it?
Yeah, he's using.
He's
it.
Helping. I think. Well, yeah, I think
in,
Obi-Wan
in the guiding
is a bit
manner,
of a,
not like right. He's actually doing it for him.
I think he might have channeled the Force into him a bit, maybe, but because we know that the Force is strong in his family, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that he would be able to shoot
just,
that. Plus, he said, you know, he was already doing similar stuff on Tatooine, so
I find it incredible.
Force.
I find it incredibly convenient that he could just tap into it when he hadn't really done a whole lot with it.
This goes to where in that scene where they're in Cloud City and he falls into that air vent and he's hanging upside down on that antenna, he calls out to Leia and Leia automatically feels him and tells Lando to turn around. We have to go back. You know, that's using the Force right there. You know, there's no other explanation for them doing that other than that. You know, and Leia's inherent, it'd be latent somewhat, but still inherent ability has him connect between Luke and Leia in that scene.
Well, I mean, there's been studies in real life where twins can do certain things like that, whether it's credited or discredited in certain circles. I mean, people certainly believe that it's a pretty widespread opinion, actually, that twins have some sort of maybe not ESP or telepathy or anything like that, but there is something between twins that, you know, can be explained in real life as opposed to using the Force.
So you don't think are you saying the Force doesn't exist? Or
no, I'm not saying the Force doesn't exist. I'm just saying that I don't think that Luke's twin being nearby and being able to feel that Luke is in trouble is necessarily using the Force whenever there's real-life instances.
Well, yes, but, I mean, how else would she know exactly where he was if it wasn't for the Force?
Right.
I mean, I just want to disagree with you guys so that we can have an interesting discussion. Why do you have to rake me over the coals for it? Come on.
Yeah, that...
I do think it's open to interpretation, though.
Yeah, a lot of people have also said, like, you know, now that Leia knows, why didn't she become a Jedi herself after these movies? And because they've shown scenes of her in the trailers, and she is, you know, obviously she's still with the Resistance.
She ain't no Jedi.
And she's definitely no Jedi. And they asked that to J.J. Abrams, and he replied, it basically came down to her, she chose to, you know, stay and help the Resistance and orchestrate that against the First Order or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, because, like, even in the EU, she trains a little, but she doesn't I don't think she becomes a full-on Jedi.
Yeah, she still plays more of like the diplomat,
right.
Yeah, politician, like she somewhat did in the original trilogy.
Well, we kind of touched on lightsaber fights, and you know every movie has its duel towards the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite? Let's say this, okay? Because I have different criteria for two of them. Most impressive, and then most dramatic.
Well, I would have to say, right off the top of my head, the most like dramatic and impressive would have to be from the first movie, in the prequel, where Darth Maul fights Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn, resulting in the death of Qui-Gon Jinn. I mean, that battle was so visceral, and it was like all over the place, and like you could feel when Qui-Gon dies, like how like angry Obi-Wan is, and he just like is so pumped up. He just wants to get in there and like avenge his master's death. And
by the way, the
ensuing saber battle that they do has to be like one of the best ones out of all of the six movies.
Okay, I do think, for me, that's the reason why I separated it out. That's the most impressive from a choreography standpoint, and Ray Park knocks it out of the park. That's a great scene. The music, the Duel of the Fates music playing behind it is the best music of the series.
Totally epic.
One of the things that's always been interesting about that, and this might derail us just slightly, I'm kind of the opinion that Obi-Wan kind of dabbles into the dark side on that fight. Gives into revenge.
I agree. I totally agree. I think that's the most impressive one. The choreography makes it like just amazing to watch. But because you brought it up, I think my favorite one, though, is the one at the end with Vader and Luke on the Death Star. And I think I agree with you, because I think Obi-Wan and both Luke dabble into the dark side during those fights. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they win, because they use that anger.
Mm-hmm.
Because like,
and you Darth know what Maul, anger leads to, right?
Right. Darth Maul was just, he was owning both Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan during that fight. And it wasn't until Qui-Gon gets killed or stabbed that, Obi-Wan really just steps up his game.
Yeah. I have always been of the opinion that, he taps into the dark side of the Force in order to defeat Darth Maul. And I've always found that kind of interesting. I've honestly had never drawn the parallel that Luke does the same in Return of the Jedi. But as far as the one that is the most impactful to the story for me, it has to be Empire Strikes Back in Cloud City. I love the visuals in that between Luke and Vader. I absolutely love the smoke, and Vader kind of messes around with him, doesn't really know where he is in certain spots. It has a suspense to it that other ones don't have. And then of course, you get to the end of it and you get the I am your father. And, as far from a moving the story along and emotional impact, I think that for me, that one's far and above any of the other ones.
Well, yeah, for the original trilogy, I would totally agree with you. I mean, the entire time Darth Vader is totally playing around with Luke, because Luke is nowhere near his level at that time. And he's like throwing boxes at him and hitting him in the back with debris and everything. And he knows that he's not going to hurt him. But when we go into Return of the Jedi, it's a whole different other story. And we get that scene where he throws the lightsaber at him and he comes back. That was like amazing, to have seen him do that. But just how you said, like, the only way that Luke can really go toe to toe with him is to invoke the hatred and the rage and like just overwhelm him to the point where he like literally falls on the handrail on the side, and Luke just cuts off his hand, and he's ready. He's standing there with the lights are ready to finish it, and he has to, take a step back, and then the Emperor's right there, says, "Yeah, finish him."
Right.
And it's like, no, I am a Jedi, just like my father before me. That, like, shows like that he was able to collect himself and gather his sense of who he is and say, no, I'm not going to give in to hatred and rage and fear and what have you. And he's going to say, I'm going to be, the better one. I am a Jedi. And that for the original trilogy is like the best duel and ending to any trilogy you could possibly have.
Yes,
Yeah.
Misa think Luke much
Oh no.
improved in the Force.
But yeah, to just to piggyback a bit, that's why the Jedi fight is the best for me because they're on equal grounds there. In Empire, there's like no way that Luke is going to beat Vader, and that's what Yoda was trying to tell him, that you're just not prepared. But then you look at Return of the Jedi, and he comes back to face Vader because that's his final task, and it's just the emotions of that, everything leading up to that, it was just amazing.
Would you guys agree that that the scene in Revenge of the Sith where Obi-Wan and Anakin are going at it is comparable or in a totally different other league?
This is the problem I have with the prequels lightsaber fights. They were too choreographed to the point where I think sometimes you lose the emotion of the moment. Because like there's that one scene in on Mustafar where they're fighting and they're just like twirling their lightsabers around and not even striking each other or attempting to strike each other. And the first time I saw it was cool, but then on subsequent watches, it looks ridiculous. No.
Yeah, I would have to say like yeah, it did get a little overboard, and I that battle went a little bit too long, where they're like chasing each other down these catwalks and hopping down the towers, and then going back and forth on these floating droids that are on top of the lava.
That's the
See,
most ridiculous part of the fight to me.
I love that part of the fight though.
I hate
That's
that. I
where I
hate that.
disagree
I think it
because
looks awful.
I like that, this fight was just because I think because they were so equal, and they were more equal than Luke and Vader were in their last fight, and I think that something like that, I don't know. I just couldn't get enough of it. I thought it was an amazing fight, and I enjoyed like every second of it. It was a bit ridiculous at times. I can understand where
Well,
why people would think that, but
whichever one of them started leading them outside of that room or that area where they first started, where Padme landed the ship. Usually, whenever the person who leads like the fight is the one that is kind of like feeling that they're not at the advantage right there, and I think it was Obi-Wan that started like leading him away from where Padme was, because I guess he didn't want her get hurt,
Yeah, he wanted to protect her, right?
right? So in one he did that, but then we see it flipped around where Anakin is the one that starts moving around and hopping around, and then Obi-Wan has to chase him around.
I mean, I understand. Well, I while I enjoyed the fight, I get that it was just, I can understand the complaints because it was obvious that it went on that long because Lucas just wanted to have a nice long fight. It didn't really add to the story. It didn't need to necessarily be that long.
Okay. All right. Worst lightsaber fight. And I'm going to go first because I think I have hands down the answer. Attack of the Clones, Count Dooku against Anakin and Luke, or not Luke, Anakin and Obi-Wan. I think
Okay.
that's awful.
I'm going to say Attack of the Clones. Count Dooku and Yoda. That was garbage.
Anything with Christopher Lee. It's just not good.
It's not. He's too old. It's obvious that it's CGI and a stunt man, and then it's not believable. At no point did I think Count Dooku could really do what he was doing. But yeah, I just.
So that fight between Yoda and Count Dooku, or was it Count Dooku and Anakin? Which one of those were the worst?
Yeah, for me, it's
His is the one with Yoda.
one
Mine's
with
the one with
Yoda.
Anakin.
Just CGI Yoda bouncing around.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but at the same time, I kind of wanted that. I just want to see Yoda be a badass.
Yeah, and I you would have to
That.
expect him to be able to fight like that because of his small stature. You know, he's not going to be able to stand, you know, toe to toe with a guy and just fence off. You know, he has to be all over the place to really be effectual.
And I understand it looks ridiculous, but they do set you up for that. They talk about how he's a master swordsman, and Obi-Wan tells Anakin if he channeled all of his desires into being a great with a lightsaber, he would rival Master Yoda. And then you've got it's not in that same battle, but when they're on Kashyyyk, and he throws the lightsaber into the droid's chest, and then jumps on him and pulls it out. That's awesome.
Yeah, he did that too on in Revenge of the Sith when they go to infiltrate the Jedi Temple that was taken over by the clone troopers. That when him and Obi-Wan are trying to go in there to see the security videotapes, that he does that same move where he throws his lightsaber into a clone trooper's chest and, you know, pulls it out, and then he finishes off another one.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm remembering. Maybe
Yeah.
that didn't happen on Kashyyyk. That I think I misspoke. But
Yeah, I
yeah,
think on
that move,
Kashyyyk
I
he's
think that's
more
awesome.
of in the command post, you know,
Yeah, he
directing
climbs up on
everything.
Chewbacca.
Right, and then they run
Yeah.
around on
Which
the
is a cool moment, but that whole scene was kind of unnecessary in my opinion, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, the one on Kashyyyk or the one on
Kashyyyk.
well, that one was when, you know, in response to, you know, the Order 66, that he knew something was going to happen and he defended himself.
Yeah, but I didn't think he didn't need to be there. They just wanted to do that to show Chewbacca.
Yeah, I agree. Chewbacca, there's
That's
so,
that was the
but I
only
think
purpose of that.
that's the problem with the prequels. There's a lot that's in there that is just in there to as a callback to the originals.
And that's why it
And
doesn't make sense. Sorry, go. I
Oh
thought you were kind of wrapping that thought up.
no, I mean, and not only is it, you know, the callback, but they don't work because in context of the original, like for instance, the fact that Anakin built C-3PO, but for some reason he has no idea who C-3PO is on Cloud City, or you know, he doesn't recognize R2, you know, stuff like that. It's just,
And what I was going to say is, and that's the reason why anyone that tells me that you should watch the series 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you're wrong. Because 1, 2, and 3, while they already have issues, they don't work at all if you try to watch them without the backfilling that the previous previous trilogy does for it. It's all dependent upon you having the knowledge of the future, because there's so many callbacks that it just doesn't work on the same level if you don't have the backstory that you're going to have moving forward. I don't think it works as well, and I think that you're missing a lot if you go in cold. Like if you're going to show this to, you know, an 8 or 9 year old that's never seen any of them, don't start with the originals, because it's so much of the information's backfilled with what happens later on that it's not going to have the same impact.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this before that like the you know, you have to see episode 4 first, then go back to 1 and then
Yeah,
do
there's an order. I'm
yeah.
not yeah, I'm not sure, but I actually just prefer doing 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, just the order that they were released in. I don't have a problem with that, but anyone that tries to watch the original trilogy before the last one, or the, you know what I'm saying, 1, 2, and 3 before they watch 4, 5, and 6, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I just don't think it works as well. Nothing has the same impact.
I
So,
totally agree.
totally agree.
and then you totally lose the impact of I Am Your Father in Empire Strikes Back if you've already watched the trilogy moving forward. But,
And then you have to question, like, Obi-Wan and Yoda decide to hide these kids, but then they give. they put Luke on Tatooine, where, you know, Vader was born, and give him the last name Skywalker. It's like, how hard were you trying to hide them? It's not so much that they hid them well, just that the Empire wasn't looking.
And it's so convenient that Bail Organa and his wife just, we've been thinking about adopting a girl. Let's take this one.
Yeah.
That's always bugged me, too. Oh, we've been thinking about adopting a girl. We'll take her. So,
hey, on that note, I wanted to ask you guys, how would you rank these movies from best to worst?
Empire's number one, then New Hope, and followed up with Return of the Jedi.
Mine is also Empire, but I would do Revenge of the Jedi and then New Hope.
Return of the Jedi and then New Hope. I disagree for reasons that I've already stated. Reggie nailed my opinion.
Because you know what ruins Return of the Jedi for me? It's...
Don't say the Ewoks.
It is the Ewoks, I'm sorry. It's the Ewoks.
Oh, come on.
Because like every time I watch it, I'm looking at these little furry beasts with bows and arrows and sticks and stones taking down stormtroopers, and there's no way that you can make that make sense.
Originally that was supposed to be Kashyyyk, and they couldn't get enough tall actors to fill the Wookiee costumes.
That's so a shame, because that would have been so much better. But, you know, it's just like, they just happened to have these traps set up so that the AT-STs could fall into them, you know? They just happened to have these logs hanging by trees.
It's Vietnam. It's exactly what it is. You have an outmanned, outclassed troop facing off against, you know, a well-trained, large army, and using their surroundings and what they have built around them and environment to overcome. That's exactly what it is. That's what Lucas was trying to convey. The stormtroopers.
I think he did it. He failed on every point on that, if that's what he was going for, because it's one thing to be like outgunned, but you know, have, you know, comparable weaponry, but these guys didn't even have that, you know? I mean, I couldn't. That would be like, I don't know, a colonial army taking down the Marines. It's just, I can't believe that would ever happen. It's just, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, but that's what happened in Vietnam.
Yeah, but I mean, the Viet Cong still had, you know, 20th century weapons, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about, Reggie. It happened. it was the Ewoks
part
won.
Of the force.
Yeah, they won, but I think that goes to writing as opposed to anything logical. But I mean, that's just why I prefer New Hope over Jedi.
How would you rank the prequels?
Revenge, 3-1-2. Then yeah, 3-1-2.
Even with Jar Jar, I think Attack of the Clones suffers from terrible acting more so than the other ones do.
Now, I would put the first one last.
What?
Because of Jar Jar Binks.
Duel of the Fates saves it for me, though. That is the best.
Yeah, that's the only saving grace that movie has.
That's the best piece of
score. You know, for me, there is nothing
series.
In the second one that's worth watching. Like, I tried to watch all of them for the, you know, to get caught up, sort of marathon them. But like the second one, I got about 20 minutes in and I just had to turn it off, because it's just, there's nothing in there that's worth watching, in my opinion. The acting is bad. Every time Padme and Luke are Anakin are having their love romance or whatever you want to call it, it's just it falls flat. It just it's cringeworthy.
Are you an angel?
Yeah.
I know that's from the first one, but
right. But
that's,
I mean,
another line.
Yeah, you know, there's one line where, well, oh, never mind. I just, it's bad. I don't even want to repeat it. It's so bad, you know.
It's fine. I don't know. I mean, I don't think I would turn it off after 20 minutes. I didn't go back and watch it before we did this, but. I don't imagine that I would be that disenchanted or disheartened with it. But I do think, for me, the order is 3-1-2. It's in totality, 5-4-6-3-1-2. That's my rating. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we definitely, I think we can all agree that We have high hopes for The Force Awakens that's coming out, and hopefully they can live up to what we liked about the originals, and hopefully they won't repeat any of what we didn't like in this new movie. So, we could, just walk in there and hope that J.J. Abrams doesn't let us down.
I'm so ready for this.
Me
And
too. I'm keeping my hopes down though. I just want it to be better than the prequels. Like, if they do that, then I'll be happy.
I've tried to keep my hopes in check, but I don't think I have. So, yeah, let's go in with high expectations. Yay.
I think that JJ having the one of the writers that did the Empire Strike Back and Return of the Jedi, help him write the script is definitely, because I would have to say that, though, even we said that, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi are probably the best out of all six of them. So they're taking the best from those movies, and I hope they're improving it. And the cast that they have is just gonna take that direction, and hopefully the technology that's available today, and make something that's gonna be awe-inspiring for not only our generations, but the generations to come. Coming forward, because as we all know, that Disney is going to keep these movies rolling out as long as they possibly can.
Yeah. We got Rogue One coming out next year.
I think the thing that gives me the most hope for it is this universe is vast. It's filled with colorful environments and characters, such a wide variety, and we finally, I think, have the director on board that's going to get the best performances out of the actors that we've had to date, and someone that knows how to use characterizations and characters in a story. So I think it's set up pretty nicely to bounce close to the top of the series, and I'm looking forward to it. And we could keep this going. We could sit here and talk for 4 or 5 hours, I'm sure. If we wanted to keep it going. I'm not going to subject the listener to that, but
Yeah, I think we pretty much hit all the high and low points that we wanted to address.
I just have one question.
Yeah.
Do you think the franchise could survive if The Force Awakens isn't a good movie?
Yes.
Yeah,
I
I
don't
think
see a
it's gonna
circum
make.
I don't see a circumstance where the property dies.
I mean, if they have what they have, like if you look at already at the pre ticket sales, if they just have that, they're still better off than most movies are on a regular release. So they're
True.
already ahead of the curve than most movies have by a long shot. So there's no, I mean. If you have like a couple of hiccups in the movie, I think that they'll be easily forgiven, because overall, just people just want to see this regardless. And having like J.J. Abrams and all the cast and all the people involved, a lot of people have put their faith into this movie, and I think that it will be rewarded. They're gonna get the movie that they want to see.
It'd have to be pretty bad for a good chunk of the people to just abandon ship.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people were a little upset that they threw a lot of the expanded universe out of the canon. But I think that there are gonna be some nods here and there to that, just to keep those people happy.
They
So.
just want to build their own expanded universe, and they don't want to be tied down to what's come before it.
Right.
They purchased it for a lot of money, and they want to be able to do what they want to do with it. And I don't think anyone should condemn them for that.
Right.
It just sucks that we might not get a Rogue Squadron movie, and as a fan of the EU, there are a lot of things there that I wish I could see on screen, like the dark heir to the Empire, stuff like that. we're not going to get, but it's all good because
I'm
hoping that they're going to
they have
really take
said
care of this.
That we're gonna probably get a Han Solo spinoff, possibly an Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff. We're definitely gonna have a Boba Fett movie. So the sky's the limit. I mean, I know everything that I just said is more of like what happened in between this movie and this movie and or what happened before they hooked up with this group. But I mean, it's Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't get enough of it. And no matter which direction it is, and Disney is banking on it that people are just gonna go and see this because of that, and they're gonna take it all the way to the bank.
Yeah,
I fully stand by that statement.
Yeah.
I believe that to be the 100% gospel of the movie universe.
And that's what Marvel has over DC is because Marvel built up their universe. People know pretty much what it is, and then they're gonna go and see it. Where the DC stuff hasn't proven themselves. They've been like all over the board, and not gonna do as good.
I don't know about that. they haven't had an opportunity to prove themselves. I mean, their first Man of Steel divided people, but I think once we see Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad, then we'll have a real
we'll have a lot better idea.
Yeah, because I think it could definitely work. Especially since they seem to be going darker.
Well,
yeah, they're providing something different.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see about that. But back on Star Wars, I think that if you guys have anything else, I think we pretty much covered everything, and I think this is where we're gonna conclude this episode on the Star Wars saga.
Yeah, that's okay. Gonna do it for this week. Thanks for joining us, Reggie.
Thanks for having me.
You can check out Reggie's other podcast, In My Humble Opinion Podcast, at imhopodcast.com. There you go. Go check that out and come back next week because we're going to be talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens.
You better opening believe weekend. Your ass we will.
Oh, yeah. Are you guys seeing it in 3D or standard?
I am seeing it in 3D.
I have no idea. I just bought the tickets and that's. Are you going to be able to join us for our review, Reggie?
Oh, yeah. I will definitely be here.
Awesome.
All right.
So we might have another extended episode next week on Star Wars The Force Awakens.
This is the podcast you're looking for. So that's going to do it for this
week. I am not your father.
I am Brent. You can follow me on Twitter at XNotMalcolm.
And I'm Darth Rob, and you can follow me at RobBap1.
And I'm Reggie, and you can follow me at Hidanas.
And Misa wants your emails at cinemachatpod@gmail.com. All right. Check out the website, cinemachatpodcast.com. And we will catch you guys next week for The Force Awakens.
Use the Force, Luke.